Okay, very good. So I'll give the second talk on reactor neutrinos, experimental results and next steps. And this will complement what you have heard so far. So the outline of my talk is I will focus on first on recent results, giving you an update on the oscillation measurements from Daya Bay. I will present our measurement of the absolute reactor antineutrino flux, the spectrum, and then make some remarks on the comparison with the predictions of the reactor spectrum. And then I'll switch gears and talk about future efforts. And there are two lines of investigation, short baseline experiments, and then the determination of the mass hierarchy. As you all know, reactor neutrinos have played an important role in neutrino physics, and it's because they give us a flavor pure source of electron antineutrinos. And as Anna explained this morning, in principle, if we know the fissions or the isotopes in a nuclear reactor, we can predict the spectrum that we expect to see from a reactor. So this is the expected spectrum, and this is just a convolution of the reactor spectrum, of course, and the cross section. Now, one of the things that has happened in recent years is since the early days of reactor neutrino physics, that experiments have gone on to relative measurements between near and far detectors. And Reno and Daya Bay were the first experiments that have employed this technique. The idea is that there are uncertainties in the reactor flux predictions, reactor spectrum predictions. And to avoid those, you build a near detector, near a reactor that serves as your normalization, and then you can compare it to what you see in the far detector. And this is what has been extensively used by the FEDA-1-3 experiments to give you the precision oscillation results that you have seen. In terms of measuring or actually detecting these neutrinos, let me just emphasize that we're using inverse beta decay, so we have a coincidence signature. The positron annihilates gives us a prompt signal, and the energy that the positron deposits is the spectrum that we can then relates to the reactor antineutrino spectrum. The neutron in our detectors thermalizes and eventually captures. Our detectors use doped scintillators, so it captures on gadolinium, gives us an 8 MeV peak that is a good tag, but of course it can also capture on hydrogen and gives us a 2.2 MeV peak. So what you have seen, or what you will see in terms of updates on the analyses, in the past experiments have just analyze data that looked at the neutron capture on gadolinium, and now there's also the inclusion of data with neutron capture on hydrogen. The experiment that I'll report you on is Daya Bay, an experiment located at the Daya Bay nuclear power plant in China. And there we have built an arrangement with 3 kilometers of underground tunnel underneath the mountain, where we have 2 experimental halls near 6 reactors and 1 far hall about 2 kilometers away. And we have a total of 8 detectors deployed over these 3 halls. We have by now 2 detectors in each of the near halls and 4 detectors in the far hall. Some of the results are still based on our data set with 6 detectors. This was an early configuration which allowed us to start running and publish results early on. Now we are running with the full complement of 8 detectors. Now, where are we with oscillation measurements? So what I'll show right now are essentially updates that happened this summer and since Neutrino 2014. We have measured the energy spectrum in all 3 experimental halls, and this is what we have seen. These are the 2 near halls near the reactors, the Daya Bay near hall and the Lingao near hall, and this is the energy spectrum of the far hall. In terms of statistics, we have about 300,000 events in our near detectors and about 40,000 events in the far detector, and then of course we can compare these spectra to do both a rate plus spectrum analysis to determine the oscillation parameters. Now, a lot of effort in the last year has gone into understanding the spectrum for precise spectral analysis. We have an extensive calibration program, and what you see here is the gamma calibration data as a function of energy. So we've really tried to constrain over the entire energy region of interest, up to 8 MeV, our energy response. And of course, what we are interested in is understanding the scintillator response and possible quenching effects. There are two major sources of nonlinearity in our detectors. One is the scintillator response, as I just mentioned, understanding the quenching and the shrink of light fraction. And the other source of nonlinearity is electronics. We have to understand how the electronics behaves. We've gone through this calibration program. We have now a detector nonlinearity or detector response as a function of positron energy, and this is our best model for this, and the uncertainty on this is now less than 1%. We have also used sources such as boron-12 to verify our energy response, and you see here what we get for the boron-8 spectrum. A lot of work has gone into also modeling the detector efficiency, and this will become important when we talk about the absolute number of neutrinos that we detect. So we have a complete model now that folds in the energy response, the energy resolution, and also looks at all energy loss effects in the detector. And I'm showing here an example of one of the effects that we simulated, and this is the energy loss of positrons in the acrylic vessels in our detector that hold the scintillator. And so when you put all of this together, you can essentially then construct a table of uncertainties on your detection efficiency and compare your Monte Carlo simulations with data. So what we find in the end is that the correlated uncertainties are broken down, and we get a combined total uncertainty of about 2.1% on our detector efficiency. Now, as far as oscillation results, this is the latest 621 days of data using both neutron capture on gadolinium as well as neutron capture on hydrogen. And what we have done is we have taken the near-site spectra and used them to predict what the spectrum at the far site should be. And so this takes out any dependence on reactor predictions and so on. And then we make a comparison with data. So what you see here in black is the far site data. In blue is the weighted near site data. There's obviously the suppression. So neutrinos are disappearing. But then you can also make a shape comparison. And if you look at the ratio of far to near, this is what it looks like. If you interpret this in a three active neutrino model, you can make an oscillation fit, and you find that the best fit parameters, the contours, look as follows. The best fit point for sine squared 2 theta 1 3 is 0.084 with these uncertainties, and we see in delta m squared of 2.44. Now, you can play various games. You can just do a rate analysis. You can do a spectral-only analysis. You can just look at the neutron on hydrogen analysis, and you find that all of these things are consistent with this best fit. Now, one way, of course, of illustrating what this implies is you plot this as L over E, and this is our version of the plot that shows probability versus L over E, and the data from the three different experimental halls, which we have at Dyer Bay, and the best fit, and of course that demonstrates clearly that we see neutrino oscillations. Now, placing this into context, the Subong just showed one version of this table. It shows you the historical evolution over the last 3 years, or 3 or 4 years, of trying to determine, theta 1-3, and there has been great progress, and we are now at a point where we have a precision measurement of this reactor angle.
So you've added in T to K there that I think is interesting.
Yes. So just to give you an outlook of where we are going with our theta 1-3 and delta m squared measurement, so we are at this point still statistically limited. This is the uncertainty on sine squared 2 theta 1-3 versus runtime, and this is the same for delta m squared EE versus runtime. These were the points of various publications, and the red line is statistical only, and the blue line is what we expect with a rate plus shape analysis, and this is based on current systematics. So you can see that we're still gaining by running for another couple of years, and obviously we hope that we can also improve on the systematics of the measurement. Now let me say what we can do beyond three neutrinos. So this was all three active neutrinos. Now we have done a search for sterile neutrinos at Dyer Bay, and basically the idea here is that you take the normal oscillation, but you're asking, well, could there be another oscillation on top of that that essentially has a different baseline? So what we have done is we have done our spectral analysis, rate plus spectrum, and expanded the three neutrino fit to a three plus one fit. And when we do this, is essentially you can search for it again, independent of the reactor model, and see what you get. And one thing to point out is that since we have three experimental halls with different baselines, we have sensitivity to different mass ranges of sterile neutrinos. Now, this is a figure that shows you the ratio of measured over predicted versus energy. And you see our data here in black, and in blue you see what it would look like for delta m squared 4-1 of a certain value, and so this is essentially what we can constrain with our data. On the right hand side you see a sensitivity plot, delta m squared for 4-1 versus a fourth mixing angle, and what's broken down here is the contributions that we get to the sensitivity from the different experimental halls. So the near halls, the Dyer Bay hall is shown in purple. And then once you add in the second near hall, you get the blue, and once you add in the far hall, you get the solid black. So by having these different baselines, we can come up with a combined sensitivity to a 3 plus 1 model. So, and if we do this, this is what we get. This is a result that we just recently published last month. It's based still on a 6 detector data set, so not the full 8 detector data set that we already have. So this is from our recent publication. You see the exclusion line here, as well as here the Feldman-Cousin analysis, and this is for comparison on Bugey. Now, if you project what we will be able to do with the full data set of 8 detectors and 5-year running, this is what we are projecting to have in the future. And just to place this into context, this is now at a region of essentially low delta m squared. So this is delta m squared 4-1 of about 0.1. And for comparison, I've shown here the regions that were introduced by Bill this morning from the various anomalous experiments and the best fit. So we're essentially constraining things that are below this best fit. Now let me say a couple of words about the absolute reactor flux. As Anna explained, there's a question of the reactor anomaly. So when we do our oscillation analysis at Daya Bay, we look essentially at the rate of neutrinos as a function of baseline, and we look at the spectral distortion. This is a plot that shows you the rate as a function of effective baseline, and by comparing this and fitting it with an oscillation curve, this is how we get our theta 1-3 fit. We don't say anything in that about the absolute comparison to the prediction. So as I mentioned, we have evaluated our efficiencies. We have come up with a total uncertainty on the absolute normalization, which is a combination of detector efficiency, statistics, and the residual uncertainty from the fit, and we have a 2.3% uncertainty. And so we can use the data in every detector that we have. This is again based on six detectors to come up with the total flux. And we have done this, and this is what we get for the various detectors. And you see the comparison here to the different models. So we see this deficit compared to the Huber and Müller model, but this is more consistent with ILL and Vogel. Now, placing this into the global context, this is the normalization measurement or data over prediction as a function of distance for all reactor experiments. These are previous old experiments. The red dot is Daya Bay. We measure a ratio of 0.947, and so that is very consistent with the global average of all the reactor experiments. And I should point out that for this measurement, we have an effective baseline of about 570 meters, and it's based on the measurements in the three detectors in the near halls. Now, let me say a couple of comments about the spectrum. You heard from Sibong that there was a spectral feature that was observed, and this was also apparent, of course, in the Daya Bay data. When we compared the data in black with the expectation, we saw this spectral feature between 4 and 6 MeV and the slight deficit in the lower region. As far as the absolute magnitude is concerned, it's about a 10% effect for the highest bin, but of course the question is how you average it over a certain window. Now, to test the shape consistency of our spectrum between detectors, we have looked at relative shape comparisons for our detectors in each hall and so on, and they were all very consistent. So this feature is essentially seen in all our different detectors. Now, you can ask how significant is this feature. We looked at various metrics like chi-square contribution in every bin. You can also look at the p-value by looking at a certain energy window around this. But basically, you find something that is there, maybe at the 3 to 4 sigma level, depending on how you evaluate it. But the question was really, what it is. And as you heard earlier, this feature has been seen by all theta 1-3 experiments, and this is a plot that tries to show this. It overlays the Daya Bay feature, double show, and Reno. We looked at various possibilities. We tried to fit individual beta branch, a delta function. We looked at the time dependence. None of this seemed to fit. And it was kind of surprising when then Tom Langford and Dan Dwyer looked at the databases and just added up the contributions from the databases to see what they would get for a reactor neutrino spectrum. And this really prompted the question of, do we understand our reactor spectrum? And so this is a plot from their paper, which is currently in publication. The red is the nuclear calculation, and of course, the blue band is the beta conversion from Huber and Müller. And as Anna pointed out, the question really is, if you look at this calculation and you compare it to what you have in the old Schreckenbach spectrum, is this consistent or is there an error somewhere? And this is just showing this again, the coincidence or the apparent agreement of all experiments with this somewhat ad hoc nuclear calculation that seems to reproduce this feature. Now, to come up with a final conclusion on this issue, I would say as an experimentalist that data is needed to understand the spectrum and perhaps constrain the reactor models and sort out for good what is going on there. Now, let me switch gears, and this is now looking into the future. So we have made oscillation measurements. We have the open question of, do we understand the reactor spectrum? And is there any sign of sterile neutrinos? So what you can envision is a reactor experiment at very short baselines. You would like to do such a measurement at a place where you understand the spectrum very well. And this could be a research reactor that operates on highly enriched uranium fuel, because that essentially provides you a static spectrum throughout a fuel cycle. And you would like to have a source that is as point-like as you can get. And there are research reactors that have compact cores with dimensions of less than a meter. And if you have this in hand, then you could do a measurement that could inform you on some of the issues that I just described. In the US, there are three research reactors that we have looked at, NIST, ATR, the Advanced Test Reactor in Idaho, and Haifa at Oak Ridge. And of course, there are other efforts worldwide that also look at this issue. Now, the advantage of a research reactor is perhaps illustrated with this. I mean, this is the dimension or size of a commercial core. If you go to a high-powered research reactor, you will really have almost a point source of neutrinos. So what I'd like to do is now, for a couple of minutes, describe a U.S. effort that's going on to look at this, place this into a worldwide context, and then go on to the mass hierarchy measurements. So one effort in the U.S. to mount an experiment to do a precision measurement of the spectrum and look for oscillation is PROSPECT at Haifa at Oak Ridge. This is a picture of the Haifa reactor building inside. The reactor is essentially just behind this. It sits in a water pool. This is a CAD model of this. There you see the reactor. And one thing you can do at this facility is place a detector right next to this wall. So we've been looking at this to build a compact neutrino detector that you could place at a distance of about 7 meters from the reactor core. There's enough space that you could think about even moving it and exploring some of the baseline dependence, and in the future maybe add a second detector at about 20 meters that would give you much increased coverage in the parameter space. So the way it would look in this case is eventually you might have two detectors near a very compact reactor core. The primary physics objectives of such an experiment would be to make a precision measurement of the U-235 reactor spectrum for physics, and it turns out there's also interest from the safeguards community for this. And this is a plot that shows you how you would have essentially a static spectrum that you measure over a fuel cycle compared to a conventional reactor spectrum that changes and varies through the evolution of a fuel cycle. Now, the other thing you can do is then search for short baseline oscillation by having a detector that is big enough that you can look for oscillations within and eventually also between both the near and the far detector. And to just give you an indication of the reach, of the oscillation reach of such an arrangement, this is a plot that shows you essentially for different delta M squareds what you can see in a near detector only, which is about a 2-ton detector, 2 meters long, or if you add a far detector, so you get a much greater reach in L over E. In terms of sensitivity to sterile neutrinos in the delta M squared versus sine squared to theta parameter space, this is now delta M squared 1.4 versus the mixing angle. There is the best fit from the reactor anomaly, if we still have an anomaly. And this is the reach 3 sigma for 1 year for a near detector alone, or phase 2 would be 3 years, 5 sigma for both of these detectors. So having an arrangement like this would allow you to probe this parameter space quite conclusively. The approach to such a measurement would be to have a detector that can discriminate and reject the backgrounds that you will encounter by being close to a reactor and on the surface. You will need a segmented detector that allows you to do the position resolution and look for oscillations in the radial direction. We envision a detector about 2.5 tons with a new lithium-doped scintillator and about 150 optical segments that have very thin wall separation, much less material than what previous experiments used, so that you can keep your dead volume down as much as possible. And then you could do also systematic checks by essentially moving the detector over a distance of 2 or 3 meters back and forth with respect to the reactor. Now I'm going to skip a couple of the experimental details, except to mention that we're developing a new lithium-doped scintillator that seems to be quite effective in actually rejecting a lot of the accidental backgrounds that we might encounter in such a situation. So let me just mention that, of course, for such a measurement, backgrounds are key. We have done a campaign of background measurements at the Haifa reactor where we have mapped out as a function of position the spectrum. We have looked at the background spectrum for reactor on and off, and this is all now folding into our simulations for the experiment so that we can design the detector and the appropriate shielding package. I should point out that there are a variety of efforts to do this kind of physics, and another effort that's using a highly segmented detector is NULAT, and we heard from Bruce a little bit about this yesterday, where you could essentially build a cubic detector on a lattice and try to use the topology of the event deposition to even get better background rejection and energy resolution. I should also mention that these were just a couple of US efforts. There's a worldwide initiative, I don't want to call it program, but there are a number of experiments with different experimental approaches that try to get to this physics, and every approach has slightly different pros and cons. But I think the point here is that if you have a short baseline experiment and you have an intermediate baseline reactor experiment like Dyer Bay, then you have the tools at hand to completely cover the parameter space that you're interested in. This is the sterile limit that we set from Dyer Bay for the low delta M squared, and you would need a new experiments to cover this delta M squared region. Let me take the last few minutes I have to talk about another big topic to which reactor neutrinos might be able to contribute, and that is the determination of the mass hierarchy. As was introduced by Subong, the idea is to make a precision oscillation measurement at the point where the dominant oscillation is at about 60 kilometers, and of course then to look at the energy spectrum and see if you can decipher the mass hierarchy from that. There is an effort in China that's underway, the Jiangban Underground Neutrino Observatory called Juno. To do this, Juno will be located a little bit south of Daya Bay, so this is the coast of southern China. There are two new power plants that are currently being built, Zhangyang and Taishan, both about 18 gigawatts, and together they will have a baseline of 53 kilometers to Juno. Juno will be about a 20 kiloton liquid scintillator detector placed so that it can then pick up the neutrinos from both of these reactor sites. The technical approach to such an experiment is to build a big liquid scintillator detector. You need about 20 kilotons. You need extremely good energy resolution, 3%. And that requires high PMT coverage and, of course, light yield. For Juno, the current design foresees building an acrylic tank with a stainless structure around it that holds the PMTs and that can support this kind of measurement. Now, groundbreaking for this experiment is set for January 2015, and filling and data taking is supposed to occur in 2020. So the collaboration was formed in 2014. A detailed technical design rebook and physics book is being worked on, but the groundbreaking is going ahead. As far as the physics is concerned, the primary goal, of course, is the measurement of the mass hierarchy. And Juno, with about 6 years of data taking, assuming 3% energy resolution, and assuming 1% absolute knowledge of the energy scale, you will be able to do about a 3 sigma measurement. Now, there's other physics that you can do with such a big detector, primarily oscillation physics. And this is, I think, something that will be more achievable with such a detector. The projections on sine squared theta 1,2, for example, is to get a 0.7% measurement. So you will get into the sub-percent regime for some of the mixing angles and delta M squareds with such a large liquid scintillator detector. As I mentioned, it is a challenging project, and I don't have time to go into the details of the experimental challenges. But energy resolution is the primary challenge. You need to have very good liquid scintillator. Detector calibration of such a big detector at that precision is difficult. And of course, you need to have enough PMTs, highly functioning, high performance PMTs to make this possible. So since I am out of time, let me just wrap up now. I hope you appreciate as much as I do that reactor neutrinos were and still are a tool for discovery. The current reactor experiments that are running at a distance of 1 to 2 kilometers, they will continue to improve on theta-1-3 and give us our currently best measurements of the reactor spectrum. The medium baseline experiments at about 60 kilometers will give us precision oscillation physics and perhaps a window to the mass hierarchy. And with the proposed short baseline experiments, there are opportunities to do precision studies in a well-controlled environment of the reactor spectrum, understand this, and search for short baseline oscillations as a signature of stereo neutrinos. Thank you.
Questions?
So looking at your search for sterile neutrinos with Daya Bay, did you guys just use a bin to chi-squared in doing that, or did you do my favorite trick with Fourier transforms? It looks like that'd be a great application for it.
Yeah, so we did multiple analyses that went into this. So what's shown here is the confidence limit based on a chi-squared approach. But there were three different analyses that essentially came up with similar things.
But you're losing information by doing the binning and energy and dual.
Yes.